Hello and welcome to this week's Key Voices, conversations with folk in and around education. I'm Caroline Doherty. Today I am joined by Kate Atkins, head teacher at Rosendale Primary School, London's first research school, and CEO of Great Northwood Education Trust. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning.
It is very nice to be down here in South London this morning. Can you just tell our listeners a little bit about the context of Rosendale School?
Yeah, of course. So Rosendale is a 3-form entry primary school, which is quite a large primary school. And we have a children's centre where we provide childcare for children from 6 months to preschool. And we have a nursery class as well. And we have a bulge class in our year one class.
Right.
We have 4 forms in our year one class.
Wow.
It's a thriving, popular primary school. I've been here, since 2003, so quite a long time. And I think for me, one of the great things about the school is that it's very representative of London.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I love about London, the way that different communities butt up against each other. And so on one side of the school, we've got quite expensive private housing. And on the other side of the school, we've got a social housing estate. And the joy of it is bringing those two communities together and seeing the children learn from each other and work together and share experiences. Very active parent community. Parents are great, very supportive of the school, and we've always really had a kind of reputation for being quite innovative. Our kind of tagline, if you like, is restless in our pursuit of excellence.
Wow, I like that.
It was quite controversial when we first came up with it. But I think it really sums us up, because I think what we want to do as a school is we're constantly challenging ourselves around how do we get better. And I think the focus of that is looking at our team of staff as our most precious resource, and how do we work with that group of people in order to develop their practice and their expertise in the way that you would in any professional field. And that was one of the reasons why we wanted to become a research school when we had the opportunity.
And so for any listeners who don't quite know what a research school is, can you tell us what it means for you?
Yeah, of course. So the research schools were set up by the Institute for Effective Education in York University and the Education Endowment Foundation here in London. And in a nutshell, what they're trying to do is to provide a bridge between the evidence, the research, the academics, and the school and the classroom and the teacher. So how do we get better at doing more of the things that we know work really well in the classroom? And it's interesting, because quite a lot of initiatives, when they try to be implemented in schools, fail. Not because the initiative itself is wrong, but because implementing things in a classroom with, what have we got here? I don't know, 24 classroom teachers, 650 children.
Yeah.
How do you get that practice happening regularly, day in, day out within the classroom? So it's talking about changing practice. But it's trying to look at, okay, well, the evidence says this, but in practical terms, you'll have to do it this way. Otherwise, you can't make that connect between what works and what actually happens. And I think one of the things that I felt very clearly as a senior leader was that when you walk into great classrooms where brilliant teaching and learning is going on, you can feel it. And all of those things that the evidence tells us are great things, like metacognition, scaffolded practice, teacher-pupil relationship, oracy, and developing language skills, all of those things that evidence tells us make a great difference are happening when you see outstanding teaching and learning going on. So the challenge as a school leader, I think, and particularly for research schools, is how do you codify that in order to make it doable in every single classroom in every single school? So just a small challenge.
I know,
that we've been given.
Minor thing.
We'll fix it in a fortnight.
And you mentioned there metacognition, which is something that you've really championed as a way to improve pupil outcomes. Can you tell us a bit more about what you've discovered through kind of creating and trialing and evaluating the program that you use?
So if I go right back to, I think it must have been 2010, 2011 when this project first started, the Sutton Trust had produced a great graphic showing the impact on attainment of certain approaches against its cost. And they sort of launched it around the time of the pupil premium because they wanted to say to schools, spend your money wisely. Yeah. Really think deeply about what's going to make a difference to these children's outcomes, to disadvantaged pupils' outcomes. And we looked at all the things that made an impact. And lots of them we were like, yeah, feedback. Obviously, we know that dialogue with kids and coaching is really important. And one of the things that we felt we hadn't really got a handle on as a school was metacognition. And so we spent some time exploring what we thought we meant by metacognition. Yeah. And sort of it's that understanding amongst pupils of the active role that they play in learning. So I'm understanding the process of what happens when you learn something, and therefore I can control it and I can reflect on my learning and adapt and change my approach. And we realised that some of our pupils had those skills because they probably saw them modelled to them either at home or in different environments, and some of our pupils had really never come across those skills before. So what we wanted to do was to put together a way of teaching those metacognitive skills so that you could name them and identify them, and the pupils themselves knew what was going on, and then implementing them throughout your classroom practice. So we started off looking at this approach. We call it Reflected within our year three group. We thought that it had some promise. Mm. So we went and did a bid to the Education Endowment Foundation to say, can we test this and see if this works? And we did a very small randomised control trial with 30 schools across the country. Mm. And in that trial, one of the year five classes got the approach and the other year five class didn't. Mm. And then they'd taken a baseline measure. So one of the great things about EEF trials is that they're always independently evaluated. The person who's promoting the approach doesn't evaluate it themselves. So Manchester University were our evaluators, and they took a baseline measure and then an end measure. And we found that children who'd had our approach made an additional 4 months progress in maths. They didn't make good progress in reading, and we figured that's because we thought some of the teachers might have dropped a reading lesson in order to do the metacognition lesson, but it showed to have promise. So then the EEF asked us to do a large-scale randomised control trial. So we've had about 105 schools across the country. Half of them have had the reflected approach and half of them hadn't. And the results of that will be published next year. Oh, so we've done that over 2 years. Yeah. So sort of you've asked me to talk about the process in terms of what it did for Rosendale. And I think one of the fundamental changes that it made is that it really encouraged and gave our staff permission to think deeply about their practice and to analyse the things that they were doing and think about why they were doing them. It shifted our kind of whole focus around developing good practice. So, for example, we used to come together after school for an hour every Monday. We still do, but we used to call them staff meetings. And, you know, you ended up talking about who was going to tidy the DT cupboard and, you know, where the art resources were. Yeah. So we thought actually back then, you know, schools were just developing kind of intranets and wireless and communication systems. And actually we thought, you know what, we can do a lot of that via Google Drive or, you know, via email. So we changed them and we called them adult learning sessions because we wanted the name that you give something it kind of influences people's attitudes towards it. And now, so I think we have a much greater focus on how can we share great practice? How can we reflect and think about what we do as professionals in order to develop? And one of the kind of knock-on effects of that has been that we have a very stable staff. So our retention is really high amongst teachers. People tend to come here as newly qualified teachers and stay because they feel like they're continually learning and developing. I do think being a big school has an advantage with that, because you can move year groups. Mm-hmm. So our current nursery teacher has taught in year six and year four and year two. And of course, you want to keep staff because you work with them and they understand your ways. We have quite a an interesting approach here. We don't do any setting or streaming or ability grouping. Mm. We use mixed attainment teaching. And staff then kind of learn and develop and improve their practice. And as a result, the outcomes for kids improve and the kids get a really great deal in the classroom.
Yeah, and it must be for staff to feel that they're doing work that has implications or is, you know, transmitting across the country and involving them in that research process must be must be really exciting as well. You mentioned there the mixed attainment teaching. Could you tell listeners who might be thinking, I don't know how that works in practice, what does that look like and what kind of impact has it had?
So the kind of mixed attainment teaching that we use is Kagan cooperative learning. There are other forms of mixed attainment teaching, but we'd done a lot of thinking about implementation before we changed. And you can't, so many of our teachers had grown up in and been trained in that, you know, three-way differentiation, you know, the literacy hour, the numeracy hour. And we felt very strongly that that wasn't the way to go for a myriad of reasons, some of them morally, thinking that actually at 5, 6, 7, 8 should we really be saying to children, that's what your ability is and that's what your ability is. And partly because we understood that the gap that exists between our kind of our pupils and our disadvantaged pupils is primarily a language gap. So there's a brilliant bit of research that came out of Boston that talks about the language gap amongst three-year-olds, and it's vast. You know, it's something like children who come from a professional family by the time they're three will have heard 30 million words. If you come from a family on benefits, you'll have heard 10 million words.
Wow.
So there's a huge language gap. So one of the things, and I'm an early years professional, that was my background. One of those things we realised very early on is we need to get our kids talking and listening and hearing great language models. And if you're sitting on a table with other pupils whose language is maybe as poor as yours, where does that come from? How are you ever going to get better? So we knew that when we made this change, we really wanted to for it to be successful. And where a lot of things fail is when schools say, don't do that anymore. But they don't provide an alternative. And so there's a huge vacuum. And so the whole approach fails because teachers aren't sure what they're supposed to be doing. Actually, I really recommend for any sort of school leaders who are listening that the EEF provide a guidance report on implementation, which is brilliant. And I really recommend that if people are thinking about making some change, that they read that report. Because one of the things it talks about is sort of getting the climate right, if you like, before you implement your change. So getting a few people on board, which is what we did initially with Kagan, and then we implemented it. So as a result, all of our children sit in mixed attainment teams of four. And those teams change every half term. So you get the opportunity to work with and listen to everybody in your class. You then, when you're looking at doing guided practice, the structures and the coaching structures that are within Kagan means that children coach each other. And one of the interesting things actually that we discovered when we started doing this is that our number of pupils working at greater depth increased. When we started, I think there were some parents who were slightly anxious about, well, my, you know, higher attaining child is just going to be a teacher. For another pupil, and although I don't necessarily know that that's a bad thing, you know, I understand that parents want to make sure that their child is doing as well as they can do, and of course with the mastery curriculum coming in, what then happened is that the more you explain it to somebody else and you coach and you teach, the deeper your understanding becomes and the better you are. You also, you know, you put a glass ceiling on pupils' attainment if they're only ever going to be able to work at that level. So what we have here is an expectation is that everybody, every pupil will achieve those outcomes. What we need to provide is the scaffolding that supports pupils who are going to take slightly longer to achieve those outcomes, as well as knowing that some pupils are going to need a challenge and an extension in order to go further. So, in a kind of quite probably quite long-winded nutshell, that is what Kagan looks like within the school, and its impact is results have improved across the board, and particularly for the children working at greater depth.
I just want to come and see it now. I'm going to go and run into a classroom when I finish this and have a look.
It is fantastic. We had a visitor yesterday morning who just happened to come at the time when our teams had just changed. And one of the things that, that Kagan talks about, it also develops language skills and social skills. And so when you get in your new team, everybody does team builders, that you get to know each other, lots of talking, lots of listening, lots of fun being had. And our visitor was in the classroom where the children were doing, it's called a structure called celebrity interview. And so they've written questions for each other about the half-term holiday, and then everybody gets the chance to answer them. And the energy kind of generated by that is phenomenal. It's a great way of working in a classroom. Actually, we also do it in our adult learning sessions. So as teachers, we all sit in teams of four, and those change. And again, it helps us get to know each other and work together.
Well, exactly. I can vividly recall children that I didn't really know at primary school because I was in fish fingers and they were in sausages group or whatever.
Yes.
And you just didn't really mix. Yeah. Oh, that is fascinating stuff. We talked about research trials, and half the schools in England have been involved in a trial with the EEF. But I guess it also means that there are schools that are less engaged with research. What do you think are the main barriers schools face to getting involved? And what advice would you give schools who are struggling to kind of find a place for research?
I think the first thing I think it's really important to say is it's really hard being a school leader. It's incredibly hard work. And to all those head teachers out there who just, kind of maybe got their head on the desk and thinking, I just haven't got the time to get into research, just sort of send a big hug, really, because it's a really, really hard and lonely job. And that isolation part of it, I think, is one of the difficulties. What I think we need to do to get better at is about kind of creating communities. We need to look at getting local authorities to start talking about research and evidence. I think sometimes, the inspection framework is an interesting one. I think obviously accountability is very important, but not when it stultifies and freezes practice, if you like. And I think that the compliance agenda has become so strong that schools and local authorities are frightened to change and to do different things. And interestingly, my experience always with Ofsted inspectors has been that if you know your school and you know where you're going and why you're trying to get there and how you're getting there, inspectors, kind of relish those, seeing those kind of stories going on in schools. I think sometimes schools feel a bit, like, well, why do I need to change? Everything's going fine. And I would ask, as a school leader, I don't think everything's going fine until every single child is at age-related expectations at the end of the year. Crazy, because, I think you're almost never going to achieve that. But that's what my expectation is, and that's what my goal is. And I know we're going to fall short sometimes, but that is what we should be striving for. And you're not going to get there unless you look at what the evidence says work. And we have to also, as school leaders, be prepared to challenge ourselves and throw out everything that we believe to be so, if actually it's proved not to be the case. There was a time when everybody wanted to talk about VAC, visual, auditory and kinesthetic ways of learning, and that's been rubbished by the evidence. But we do know that there are things within that are sensible, things like making sure that kids move regularly, understanding that we need to get oxygen to the brain, and that actually probably after 20 minutes, kids need to have some sort of break and get moving. Analysing how we behave as adults when we learn something in order to sort of transfer that to kids. So I think you have to be brave. I think you have to be social. In the sense that I think as a school leader, you should get out and talk to other school leaders and see what's out there. I think my journey into research started by going to conferences and listening to great people talk. And I would recommend to any school leader out there, go out of your school.
Yeah.
I think school leaders get into terrible bad habits of thinking, I cannot possibly leave my school because it will fall down if I'm not in the building. It won't. How is your school going to get better if you don't get better and develop as a leader? And also, you've got to test your team out. You've got to give your team the opportunity to run the organisation, you know, while you're not there. That's a gift that you give to a certain extent. So, yeah, be brave, be social, and be patient. Proper change takes a long time. And I think that we've become victims in the education world of wanting some, you know, off-the-shelf, blueprint, quick fix system. All of that low-hanging fruit has been picked by schools. What we need to do now is think fundamentally about changing classroom practice. That's difficult, and it takes time. And so you've got to hold on to that and know that any change that you're going to implement, really you need to think of implementation, I would say, as a 2-year process, plus another 3 years to make sure that you've got it thoroughly embedded.
And as you say, accountability and other drivers, people are always going to feel under pressure to deliver results quickly.
Yeah.
And as you say, it's...
That doesn't happen. Mm. It takes time to do it really deeply and really effectively.
Yeah.
It takes time. So hold on to your beliefs and get in there.
And what kind of things could you do if you were going to sort of start small?
Yeah. I would look at action research projects within the classroom. I would get your teachers to do some really simple action research. Yeah. And what do I mean by simple? Well, possibly I can best illustrate that by giving an example of something that we did. So we've done a lot of action research over the years. And one of the projects that I always remember was in a year four classroom, and it was looking at learning times tables. And the teacher's question was, will mixed attainment coaching pairs improve disadvantaged children's learning of their times tables? So looked at a group of children who were really struggling to remember their tables, paired them up with somebody who was going to be their coach for that academic year, and then we had a parallel year four class where that wasn't happening.
Right, okay.
And so we could look at the difference. And actually what Esther G, the class teacher, discovered was that it made a huge impact on those pupils' abilities to remember, because they had a buddy who was like, right, come on, you know. And because it was mixed attainment, it was somebody who already knew their tables, so could help them out. And we found that the coach became just as emotionally invested in the success of the pupil as the coachee was. And that was something that we discovered from a really simple classroom project that we could then build on and think about, okay, so how can we then extend this further in the school? So then we looked much more deeply in years five and six at looking at coached feedback and peer feedback for lots of different things, not just for maths, but for writing as well.
Fantastic.
And sorry, can I just say as well that if you are interested in starting some action research projects and you've never done it before, Rosendale Research School has a website, and on there two of our members of staff, Doug Cranston and Matthew Criddle, who run the research school alongside myself and Justine Payton, they're doing a whole series of blogs and podcasts this year about a kind of year in action research, what it looks like within your classroom. Because I think sometimes we think that it has to be all whistles and you know, and bangs and all that kind of thing. And sometimes it really isn't. It's just about refining your practice in such a way that it makes what you're doing more successful. So go into the website, and if you want to find out what we're doing, it's all there.
Definitely, and we'll share a link to that as well. Well, that's packed with ideas and advice there. Thank you very much, Kate.
It's been
really
a real pleasure.
Appreciate talking to you today, and thank you very much for listening. Key Voices is produced by The Key, giving education leaders the knowledge to act. Members of The Key for School Leaders can access hundreds of articles on the latest issues in education, including some case studies about what's going on at Rosendale, at thekeysupport.com.